The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, text 69, given by Srila Narendra Swarup Das on April 24th, 1992, in Catonsville, Maryland.
Chapter 2, verse 69. It's on page 157, those of you who have books. This verse was for me the eye-opening verse, actually, the first piece of Krishna conscious literature I ever got from a devotee in the street was a little booklet called Who is Crazy? The devotees were handing out. Naturally, we saw them and we thought, they're crazy. They had a little pamphlet called Who is Crazy? And that was a lecture Prabhupada gave on this verse we have here tonight. And I said it's an eye-opening verse because it's about being awake and being asleep. This verse goes like this. Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha pashato mune. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. I'll read his purport short here. There are two classes of intelligent men. One is intelligent in material activities for sense gratification, and the other is introspective and awake to the cultivation of self-realization. Activities of the introspective sage or thoughtful man are night for persons materially absorbed. Materialistic persons remain asleep in such a night due to their ignorance of self-realization. The introspective sage remains alert in the night of the materialistic men. The sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture, whereas the man in materialistic activities, being asleep to self-realization, dreams of varieties of sense pleasure, feels sometimes happy and sometimes distressed in his sleeping condition. The introspective man is always indifferent to materialistic happiness and distress. He goes on with his self-realization activities undisturbed by material reactions. So yanisha sarvabhutanam, that which is nighttime or night for all living beings, in that night the person who is self-controlled is awake. And in that time when all living beings are awake, for that the sage who sees, that is night for him. So Prabhupada explains, this is talking about, he says, two classes of intelligent people. The use of the word intelligence here is a little technical, because what is meant by intelligence in Vedic context is a little different by what we mean by it in the West. We think intelligence means the result of taking certain kind of test that measures intelligence, so some kind of problem-solving ability. But the Vedic idea of intelligence or buddhi is that which concentrates or focuses the mind in a certain direction. So here the whole cast or outlook of your mind, that's determined by this higher faculty called intelligence. It's the faculty which enables us to discriminate and for us to carry on long-term goal-directed activities without being diverted. So he says there are two classes of intelligent people. That is, their focus of their efforts are going either this way or that way. One is intelligent in material activities for sense gratification. That's their outlook. This is what they see. This is what they evaluate their lives in terms of. Does it feel good or does it feel bad? And they accept and reject on that basis. This is material activities for sense gratification. Practically, the whole world. This is they're awake for this, for enjoying in the material world. This is the world of duality. The basic push-pull. That if there's something that I want, I go for it, approach. And if there's something that's going to hurt me, I avoid it. Avoidance. The two vectors, going for it and going against it, or contrary to it. So this is what living beings, I've seen, they'll do like an analysis, psychological analysis of an earthworm, just in terms of this approach and avoidance. Earthworms, human beings, everybody. These two vectors going for what pleases the senses and avoiding what displeases the senses. So people are caught up in sense gratification. Maximize pleasure, minimize pain. So that's one group of people. That's their whole concept of life. That's their intelligence. That's their focus. Another group, it says introspective. One, they look within. They're not interested in what's going on in the material world in terms of pleasure and pain. They are awake to the cultivation of self-realization. A different thing. You notice these contrasting terms here. Sense gratification and self-realization. Prabhupada has a book, maybe you've read it, The Science of Self-Realization. This Krishna consciousness movement is a movement of self-realization. It's not a religion. It's a culture. A spiritual culture. Prabhupada says in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam that the Krishna consciousness movement is a cultural movement for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. In fact, the whole planet, animals, plants, everybody. Re-spiritualization goes even beyond human society. That's our goal. It's a cultural movement. For self-realization. So, and it stands in contrast to the culture in which we're living right now, which is a culture based on sense gratification. These are contrasting terms, self-realization and sense gratification. What we all have to know and have to understand quite clearly is these two things do not go together. Imagine a pan balance, you know, like you sometimes see in a laboratory. You used to see them all over the place. In India, you still see them, you know, where they have a lever going across a beam and two pans on either side. You know. So, same. So, one pan balance. Let's say this side is self-realization. This side, sense gratification. Self-realization goes up, sense gratification goes down. Sense gratification goes up, self-realization goes down. That's the way it is. This is a fact of life. You'll not find, you're going to... many people want that. And that's why there are so many religions. because they're promising both these things to people. You can have them both. You can have spiritual life and at the same time gratify your senses. Incompatible. And that's what Prabhupada is saying here. And that's what Bhagavad Gita. There's night and there's day. What's night to the person who is engaged in self-realization, that's daytime for the person in sense gratification. He's alert, he's awake, he's looking, where's this, where's that, where's money, how can I get more money, how can I avoid having somebody take my money away from me, and so on. And the devotee can go through all that and not even be, it's night, he's not even interested in these things. And a devotee is awake for spiritual realization, always thinking how he can develop in Krishna consciousness, and the materialist looks at him and says, you must be crazy. What are you doing? They sit and they say, what? No illicit sex? No intoxication? No meat eating? No gambling? What do you do? Do you hate life? Do you want to suffer? They have no idea of what's going on because they cannot imagine anything beyond sense gratification. So what we are doing is night to them. It's blind. They don't understand. I remember sitting down with my parents so patiently trying to explain to them what I was doing in Krishna consciousness. And I realized it wasn't, they just couldn't understand, that's all. They just couldn't grasp it. Most of us can understand about sense gratification because we've done it at one time or another, and we can sometimes imagine ourselves back in that condition. But when we are Krishna conscious, we're indifferent to the whole enterprise. The whole world is furiously rolling around trying to grab this sense gratification. And the thing you have to notice is how few people have become happy by that method. Because you have to say that in both cases, both these groups, those who are intelligent for self-realization and those who are intelligent for sense gratification, we have something in common. We are all looking for happiness. And the difference is how that happiness is to be found. The materialist thinks that by cultivating sense gratification, he will become happy. If I get... Well, really, and you discover this more and more the older you get, you need money. That's why everybody is interested in money. If you read the newspapers, it's almost always about money. If it's about wars, earthquakes, or anything else, those are things that are stand in the way of getting money. And then when these things go away, you know, like when you hear about some natural disaster, the first thing they tell you is after the death toll is how much, you know, it cost to fix it up again. It's all about money, because when you're really young, you think you can have sense gratification without money, but as you get a little older, you find out, I mean, we will, those of us that grew up in the hippie generation, we were convinced that everybody had it wrong. We thought you had to get money to have happiness. But then later, all those same people, they went to Wall Street and turned up in three-piece suits and became known as yuppies. So people they think about, if I get enough money, if I just marry the right person, if I just get the right job, if I attain the right house, if I have the right children, if I go to the right college, whatever, the whole set of conditions. If I do this, I will become happy. And they pursue these various things avidly with the notion that they'll become happy. You don't see them dancing on the streets, however, unless, of course, they're intoxicated. To have to take intoxication is a confession of failure to be happy in the material world. And that's why it's required a general anesthetic. What does it do? It reduces your consciousness. There are various industries for the obliteration of consciousness. Television is the biggest one. You can sleepwalk through your life. That, for many people, is the only solution to their problem, to the failure to achieve happiness by sense gratification. It doesn't work. Because there's a simple reason why it doesn't work. First of all, there's a couple of simple reasons. First of all, the arrangements we make in the material world for sense gratification are temporary arrangements. We have to bring our senses into contact with sense objects. Both our senses and the sense objects belong to the ever-changing system of material nature. That system is out of our control. Sometimes the system works so our senses are in contact with pleasurable objects. And sometimes the system works so that contact breaks off and then there's suffering. We try to keep a handle on it, to fix it so it always works the right way. We can't. It's always beyond our control. So what happens is, first, we're young and kind of innocent, and we think it's an easy job. We bring our senses into contact with the sense objects, and we feel pleasure, and then, boom, somehow it breaks off. What am I going to do? Then I got to make some other arrangement. But now I'm in anxiety. Even while I'm having pleasure, I'm nervous because I got to control it. I got to control it. If you want to enjoy, you have to control. It can break off at any minute. The more attached I am to this particular situation of material happiness, the more nervous I get. And then I have to start to think and plot and scheme. My senses are in contact with this sense object. Who else wants to take it away? I have to watch out all the time. So this is what happens to people. All of a sudden, the more they enjoy, the more they suffer. To get money, they have to work so hard. To get what they want, they have to worry about keeping it, and so on. So you see, that's one thing. Everything we get is temporary, and we don't control the combinations and permutations of material nature. We keep saying we're going to do it. We keep, advancing in material science, saying we're going to make it happen. We're going to cure all diseases. Just recently, a disease that was announced practically is over is back again. Tuberculosis is big. Big once more, old-fashioned, nice 19th century disease. Now it's coming back again. New diseases like AIDS, which nobody ever heard of, is suddenly springing up. Medical science goes to work. And they keep trying and trying and trying. People keep trying to control the economy. It keeps eluding our grasp. Okay, material nature is just working on its own. And you can't really control it. That's the one thing. Then the other problem with sense gratification is this, that it is sense gratification, the gratuitous seeking for pleasure in material things, unnecessarily, the sense gratification which causes us to identify ourselves falsely with the material body. Our problem is, according to the Vedas, is that we don't know who we are. We're originally spiritual beings. And as such, we're eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. That's why we don't like, or we can't take the temporary nature of things, because we're eternal and spiritual. Yet what we know in the material world is temporary. It's an incompatible situation. What we want is some state of enjoyment or happiness that is secure, never grows old, never grows stale, never breaks off. That's manifestly what we want. Because if you're feeling some happiness in the material world, everybody has this experience. You feel some happiness in the material world, everything's really nice, and then it stops. You know? She gets a new boyfriend. Your boss hires somebody else, you get fired, your children don't want to speak to you anymore, whatever it is that, you know, got you play, it comes to an end. You run out of chocolate bonbons, you know, your pleasure comes to a stop. How do you feel? Immediately you feel, wow, you know, let down, disappointed, upset, even bereaved. What do? You immediately try to reconnect with that or something similar to get yourself back in a state of pleasure. So what is your desire? Well, your desire is for your pleasure, your happiness, not to come to an end. Where does that come from? Why do we want it? Why do we want happiness that doesn't come to an end? And if you say, well, if you want it to keep on going, how long do you want to keep on going for? What are you going to say? Well, how long can I have? Forever. That's what we want. So here we are, manifestly, just a little introspection, you can see that we want a happiness that goes on without any interruption and end, and we're looking for it in a place where everything is temporary. Proof. The material world will not do. There will be no happiness in this material world. You can see that. Anybody can see. Still, everyone keeps trying. It's not for nothing that material nature is called Maya or illusion. Even though everyone knows, still we try. This is what meant being asleep. It's like being crazy. There's no pleasure in the material world. There's no happiness, yet everyone is driven to seek it. Well, they're driven to seek it because we are pleasure-seeking entities. We don't know how to go about it. We think that the happiness comes from satisfying the senses, even though what we get has a beginning and an end. But that actually causes our suffering. We're spiritual beings. We identify ourselves falsely with the material body. We try to satisfy ourselves by satisfying the body. All that does is force us to identify ourselves with the material body. See, notice this term, self-realization. What does that mean? That means not that I just understand in theory that I'm spirit, but that I experience myself as spirit. That is to say, I experience tangible release from the unhappiness of material existence. The constant anxiety of temporary life goes away. I experience myself. It's called liberation. I don't identify myself with the material body. Not just that I have some theory about who I am, I actually live on that basis. I've uncovered my real consciousness. So So this identification with the self, with the material body, is very deep-rooted. You see how people are into it. Look what they're doing about these false designations. Look at what problems are caused by, you know, someone's got a body that's called Croatian, and someone else has a body that's Serb. Somebody else has a body that's called female, and someone else that has a body that's called male. Someone else has a body that's called black, and someone else has a body that's called white. Look at the mountains of trouble that arise because people are so into those bodily conceptions. It's deep. It's deep. What causes it? It is sense gratification. When we engage in sense gratification, we are forced into that consciousness, I am this body. It will happen. You can't go in there and try to enjoy in this material world without also acquiring that false identity. That's the problem with sense gratification. It's not that we have no reason for what we're doing, that somebody has told us it's bad, it's naughty, it's sinful, and therefore we don't do it. No, we know what we're doing. There's a reason why all the sages of all the spiritual traditions in the world have said it's not good. Sense gratification is not good. Nobody knows why anymore these restrictions are there. They think, you know, somebody's just trying to stop everyone from having a good time. Some nasty old life-denying patriarchs, you know, envious of human happiness. No, no, there's a reason. There's no human happiness in this sense gratification. It's a desperate project, and the more we get into it, the more we're going to suffer. The more we identify ourselves with the material body, and then what happens to the material body? What's its career? Birth. Disease, old age, death. That's the career. That's everybody's life. Birth, disease, old age, and death. Wherever you go, Beverly Hills, slums of Philadelphia, rich, poor, it's there. You can't avoid it. So when it happens that disease comes, I think, now I am diseased. And when old age comes, now I am growing old. And when death comes, now I am being annihilated. Therefore, the more you're attached to the body, the more we identify with the body, the more we suffer from these things. And it's hellish. It's absolutely hellish. It's unbelievably bad. The career, you know, the happy endings in Hollywood only because they stopped the movie. The couple walks off together in the sunset and they live happily ever after. Keep the cameras on. Keep on going to the 60, 70, 80 years old. Go into the, you know, old age home. Watch the guy with the tubes up his nose trying to get his breath. You know, that's the ending. Where's your happy ending? Follow them all the way through. It's not there. So, of course, we're not saying this just to make people feel bad. Or, you know, people say, oh, that's so pessimistic. It's not pessimistic at all. That's just the way it is. Most people cannot afford to see things as they are. They have to be blind. They have to have that Hollywood happy ending scripted in their own lives. And then the reality, when it actually comes, they have to deny it. That's why you have the consciousness-killing industries. Television, sports, intoxications, whatever it is. Anything to put you out of Nintendo. You know, something you just forget about your life until death comes and relieves you of the burden. That's not the way to live. So to be alive, actually live your life, one has to come to the spiritual platform, the culture of self-realization. Human life is meant for self-realization. If we're engaged in sense gratification, we'll never fulfill our potential as a human being, and we'll never really be happy. If you really want a life of pure sense gratification, you know, the dogs don't suffer, the cats don't suffer like that, like a human being. You live like a dog or a cat, you're going to have a hard, much harder time than even the dogs and the cats. At least they do it well. But if you're a human being and you live like that, it's a tragic waste, and you suffer so much more. Even you come to the human platform with higher consciousness. The dogs and cats, they don't wonder, you know, what purpose does my life have? You wonder, what purpose? Why am I here? If you don't answer these questions, your whole life is going to be wasted. And people are wasting their lives. They're just throwing them away. They live their lives, and when it's all over, it has no more significance than that of a cat or a dog. Something which could have been a great victory. The victory of human life is that we can become free from material nature. We can graduate out of the material world as successful human beings. That's the culture of self-realization. It's almost gone. Prabhupada, therefore, calls the civilization soul-killing civilization. It's terrible to kill someone's material body. It's a mammoth crime to kill the soul. And when you take a soul that could escape, could rise into self-realization, could come to his own position, and instead drive him back deeper into material nature, that's killing the soul. This is a civilization that's tailor-made, designed to kill the soul for the sake of the gross national product, for the sake of making more money. People don't know. They don't know what they're doing. This Krishna consciousness movement is coming in the middle of this soul-killing civilization and is intended to reestablish actual human civilization. What it's meant for, what it was practiced long, long time ago, but has been practically forgotten. So self-realization means we understand the self is a spirit, spiritual being, therefore has to act on the spiritual platform. The activities of one who identifies with the material body are sense gratification. What are the activities of the soul? What does the soul do? The soul engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Soul. We want to realize ourselves as souls, we have to act like souls. We have a real life, but we've been asleep to that life in material consciousness. That real life is going on in connection with Krishna. That's the life where we become awake and alive, and where we feel spiritual happiness that is not dependent upon anything in the material world. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita, that a person who has actually attained a spiritual consciousness has happiness within himself that doesn't depend upon any of the commutations and permutations of material nature. Let me see if I can find it now. I don't remember the name of that verse. Here it is. He says here, in that stage of perfection, samadhi, or trance, is Krishna consciousness. One's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga, by Krishna consciousness. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. When the connection with Krishna is there, and one comes to the spiritual platform, then there is happiness that is natural, it's actually already there. When people are looking for happiness in the material world, they're looking outside for something that is within. That's why Prabhupada uses the word introspective. It's already there. And when it's uncovered, when that pleasure of spiritual existence is uncovered, then there's a source of eternal happiness that's always welling up and just keeps going no matter what. In that situation, one becomes completely indifferent to the pleasures and pains of this material world. They don't affect a person. He says here he is not affected in the midst of greatest difficulties. The time of death is coming and one is simply not interested. Because a person in that position understands, I'm living without my material body already. It's not that we need the body to stay alive. The body needs us. We can live quite well and much better without it. And one is in this position, is not attached to this material body. His attachment is to Krishna. That attachment can't be broken. That attachment is not based on the arrangements of material nature. So this is our actual situation. That's what human life is given to us to actually achieve. That's real human potential. To be able to achieve that for ourselves, not only for ourselves, but for everybody else. To be able to achieve that and spend our whole life for a few cheap thrills, making a few dollars. It's such a tragic waste. And to die just in pain and frustration without even knowing what we are here for in the beginning is so tragic. And yet that's what everybody is going to over and over and over again. Who's going to save him? Who's going to wake people up? Who's going to say, here's the way to actual happiness? Right now, people are addicted to sense gratification because their intelligence is contaminated and fixed in this direction. They cannot imagine anything else. What we're talking about in Krishna consciousness to them is incomprehensible. They have no notion of the spiritual platform or the spiritual world. They're so deeply immersed in sense gratification that the identification of the self with the material body is an obvious fact. I saw some book on the newsstand, some kind of health book for women called Our Bodies, Ourselves. That's what you're supposed to get into. So they can't comprehend it. It's very difficult. Fortunately, because things are so bad, things are also good. Because Krishna has made arrangement to give us very, very powerful means of rectification. chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and Krishna prasadam. This is like medicine. One in the material life is in a diseased condition of soul. Requires some heavy jolt, like a person with an infection requires a heavy antibiotic sometimes. He can't fight it himself. So this is coming from the outside. So in this way, we can actually make progress. So don't be surprised. People, Krishna consciousness is different. And they'll see it. They won't understand. I was in an airport with Prabhupada, and the reporter was interviewing him. He says, "Why do you dress differently?" Prabhupada said, "Because we are different." He said, "We are spiritual, and you are material." So there's a reason. There's a reason. It is. It's two different things. This Krishna consciousness movement, this alternative civilization, that can save people. I was also with Prabhupada in New York. This was in the temple, and some reporters came. And the reporters said to him, "Do you consider yourself the savior of the youth of America?" And Prabhupada smiled, and his eyes got wide, and he said, "Yes." He said, "And it is not just future, it is already there." He said, "See all my disciples here? Formerly, they were known as morose, but now they are all bright-faced." He said, "Everybody was, we're all grinning from ear to ear." So it's already done. So now, of course, this was in the early 70s. Now your government is so worried about the youth in this country, so you should kindly give me money and I'll save them all for you. Give me facility and I'll save them. And these reporters are writing. Like that. But Prabhupada, he always liked to joke a little bit with reporters sometimes. They were all so serious. But he was serious also. But that's what this movement is for. And it's going on. And gradually, we have a prediction that there'll be a golden age of Krishna consciousness within this Kali Yuga. But we have to... first of all, save ourselves, because this is very precarious business. We're in a kind of poisonous atmosphere. The poisonous atmosphere is that atmosphere of materialism. It's like an atmosphere that's full of ink, somehow or other some fine spray of ink is in the atmosphere. And we want to get rid of that. If you have a jar that's full of ink, so you pour it out, but again, because of that inky atmosphere, it'll fill up again. So you have to pour out the ink and fill the jar with milk, then it'll be secure. So the only way we can become free from this allurements of material society, the hooks of sense gratification, is we have to absorb ourselves in the culture of Krishna consciousness. If we're filled up with that, then there'll be no room for this other culture to hook its way into us. But that other culture, it's always going on. In material life, it's just one big series of commercials. Get this, buy this, take this, have this. We have to become resistant. So we have to engage in the culture of Krishna consciousness. That's what Prabhupada came here for, and you can see that he's had some success, and that success will continue for a long time. We should save ourselves, and then we should... But a devotee doesn't think, how can I go back to Godhead? He thinks, when I go back, how many can I take with me? So we should feel, look at these people in the material world working so hard, thinking, I'll become happy. We should know better. We should know what the prospects are for human happiness by that method of sense gratification. And we should do everything we can to save them. Thank you very much. Anyone have any questions? Yeah, comments?
Let me
talk about that a little bit, because in spiritual life there's sense gratification. Prabhupada said the meaning of life is to enjoy. He said that the meaning of life is to enjoy. So spiritual life, there's sense gratification, but it's a question in spiritual life of whose senses. So spiritual life means we gratify Krishna's senses. That art, that music, that drama, that kirtan is there to gratify Krishna's senses. And in that process, we automatically also become I become the center of sense gratification. And I'm thinking, let me satisfy my senses, and whatever I see, let that be an instrument to my sense gratification. Even if I believe in God, I think that God also orbits around me. You know, that I'm in the center and God's business is to please me. So real spiritual life is putting Krishna in the center. Let me satisfy him with a complete conviction that what actually happens, the less I think about my own pleasure and the more I absorb my senses in giving pleasure to Krishna, the more actually I become satisfied. And of course, you know the example. If you take food, we're part and parcel of Krishna, just like my hand is part and parcel of my body. So I take food and the hand doesn't try to eat the food, it gives it to the stomach at the center. The stomach enjoys, the hand is satisfied. The hand just goes, you know, and tries to eat by itself. Nothing happens. It can't get satisfied. This is what sense gratification in the material world is like. But the hand serves the center, serves Krishna. Then the hand is satisfied. So we feel also in Krishna consciousness, the deities are beautiful to look at. That satisfaction of the senses, but only because somebody has tried to please Krishna by making Krishna dress him very nicely and then hold a mirror up. So we're just trying to satisfy Krishna. We're not putting our own bodies, you know, with these jewels and ornaments. We just decorate Krishna. And then Prabhupada said, the more you decorate the deity, the more you become beautiful. We don't try to become beautiful. We just try to make Krishna beautiful. Or bring out Krishna's beauty. And automatically, we don't have to worry about ourselves. So that's the way we use sense gratification. So it's Krishna's senses that have to be satisfied. Because he's the center. Anything else? No. Questions, comments? Yeah?
Establish nature of like Krishna saying about it with some things there to gratify the senses, still thus far, it seems like we think of it in terms of what we know of Vedic culture specifically. Mm-hmm. Like those are the things that we would say most directly, like from the highest understanding of the personality of God or of Godhead, that those are the things that are the most directly pleasing, you know, with deity worship or so many things. But is it like in different cultures, let's say, where the people are kind of closer to their roots or the people where people are more kind of inwardly focused, like the things that evolve in those cultures, say certain, even, you know, where people work with the earth, the like patterns evolve, and this is kind of speculative, but is it like that those things are, that the attitude, that in a culture that's like more agrarian, saying, but because all over the world there's cultures that aren't directly mm-hmm. at this point in the world, but mm-hmm. Vedic cultures, that people also have some, you know, connection with the self, you know, or that the
yeah, it might be closer, sure.
I don't know exactly what I'm asking. I'm kind of thinking, but I'm also thinking, like, is it necessary that we... Because I guess as a Westerner, even, I've become more aware of the fact that I'm not always as comfortable with things that are kind of Indian, quote-unquote, not really Indian, you know? And I guess I'm just wondering, like, when we talk about kind of, you know, spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, is there kind of...
Well, I guess I got a sense of where you're going. Even in India, there are differences. Gujarati prasadam is different from Orissan prasadam. You know. There's always going to be local variation. The point is that to become as pure as possible and then serve the Lord with whatever is there. And I think quite naturally, you know, Krishna consciousness in America is going to be one way, Krishna consciousness in Russia it will be another. It'll be nice variety. You can already see that. We see the Russian devotees, for example, they make these beautiful like icons of Krishna, you know, the paintings. They have definitely, you can see, oh, that's Russian. It's very beautiful. You don't want to see any American, they never did like that. Make these beautifully, like the altar picture I've seen of the Russian devotees and the altars they make, you know. You can definitely see. And I know American kirtans, even when they're, you know, Bengali kirtans, they sound American. So I just think that, you know, it will spring up the more we become just Krishna conscious. And I don't think we have to make conscious efforts to adapt it. I think it'll just happen quite naturally.
But I guess sometimes there's the fear that because you know, because one isn't within a certain stencil or within, you know, that
yeah.
it's not.
Well, first I think we also try to have to be faithful to what comes down and from the parampara system. That's a fact. We have to become faithful. And I think it's a good idea to try to do that as much as we can. And then we'll see what how things change over the course of time. But you have to be able to sort of distinguish what's essential and what's not essential. And sometimes we can't, so... We take the whole thing back. But definitely, you know, Krishna seems to like pizza. Gradually come to believe that there's something new in Goloka Vrindavan. Pizza. That's not because Krishna... Because of the love for Krishna that Italian devotees have, that Krishna accepts pizza pie. So, anyway, yeah, just you.
You mentioned about the 10,000-year golden age. I've heard it mentioned before, and everyone just kind of accepts it. I was wondering where the scriptural references for that.
I don't know the names. There are Puranas in which it's stated. Several of them. And those have been quoted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other people. I had a talk with some pundits in Mayapur who actually said that the golden age of Krishna consciousness actually began in 86. The 10,000 years began in 86, they told me.
1986.
Yeah, 1986. Because the first 500 years is a Sandhya. You know Sandhya? Sandhya means like transition.
Yeah.
In between the yuga cycles, there's a Sandhya, a period of transition. Also, dawn and noon and night are called Sandhyas, three Sandhya. So the first 500 years is like a wind-up. And the actual 10,000 years began a few years ago. They said. That's where it's from. There are scriptures. Say that. I don't remember the names. They told me about them.
Prabhupada talked about that much?
Yeah, he mentioned it a few times.
He said his books are the law books for the next 10,000 years.
Yeah. No, he said it a few times. Anything else? Yeah?
This is quick, but when you were talking about, kind of better to be an animal than a human being,
If you want to have sense gratification, that is,
There's a verse, I haven't heard it in years, but there's a verse in Wendy Robertson where it's talking, something about like those who are below intelligence and those who are above intelligence enjoy happiness, and those who are in between some material kind or something.
Yeah, I vaguely remember. You remember?
Two kinds of happy people in the world. Those are self-realized.
Yeah, and those are fools. That's right, something like that. If you want to be happy, be either a transcendental or a total idiot. That's right. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.